We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
Looks like the rain has gone.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Mankind Podcast. I'm Boysen Hodgson.
And I'm Brandon Clift.
You sure are. We're together today, and we're here on the podcast, and the Mankind Podcast is a show where we do what, Brandon?
We break the molds of modern manhood to prove there's more than one way to be a man.
Constantly complicating issues of masculinity and manhood. And I am so psyched to be sitting in a room with Matthew Sloan and Brandon today. So we have an episode. We're going to be talking about dad rage. I can't even say that in full voice. The three of us are fathers all in different parts of our fatherhood journey, and we're going to be diving in. But let me tell you a little bit about Matthew. Matthew, first say hello.
Hello. Nice to be here, guys.
Welcome. I'm stoked that you're here. For the last 7 years, Matthew has been a father alongside 11 years as a husband. He's a trained integral coach from the New Ventures West, currently participates in and occasionally facilitates a dad support group. Recently, Matthew co-founded Project Rad Dad, a limited series podcast featuring fathers modeling candid conversations that launched in March of 2024. So just now. In 2011, he authored and illustrated a book recognized by Bill Kauth. Bill Kauth, one of the co-founders of the Mankind Project, as Soul Poetry of Worthy Masculinity. Currently, he's finishing his second book, an illustrated story for mindful fathers raising spirited daughters. Matthew is the creative force behind the Fatherhood Dojo, an email newsletter and podcast with the mission to empower fathers on their journey toward greater authenticity, encouraging a deeper connection with their true selves. And I first met Matthew a very long time ago after he authored his first book, and Tully's Garden. And that was like early in the days of Mankind Project doing anything recorded, and I have fond memories, and we have recently reconnected in work that we're doing with the Global Compassion Coalition, so I'm stoked about that. So Matthew, where do you want to start us off today?
Well, first, awesome to be here. I suppose I could say back. I checked out the old YouTube video of us chatting, Boysen, from 12 years ago, where my cats are playing in the background, and the audio quality in the video is a little sketchy, but certainly good memories of that too. I would love to jump in with a story and then see where we want to take this. So in the vein of this topic, I'll just say that I've generally thought of myself as a nice guy most of my life, and then parenthood came along and fatherhood came along, and I've had to really face some shadowy aspects of myself, including rage and anger on levels that I didn't expect to run into. So I'll share a story that I think encapsulates part of this, and we can weave that in and out as we go. So I can't even remember the issue that my daughter and I were having. My daughter is 7 years old. She was wearing rain boots in the house and trying to kick me. So there was something that had happened before this that I can't remember at this point, which is interesting in itself. But essentially, I must have said something to her that she didn't like, set a boundary, essentially was not giving her something she wanted. And she was starting to lose control of herself. And it built up to such a point where she was trying to kick me. She was going for my shins. She was going for between my legs. And I started to feel my body tense. I could feel that part of me that was really connected to aggression. Like, oh my gosh, like you think you're going to take me down? You're a 7-year-old girl. What are you doing? Why are you even trying this? I never experienced anything in my household like that. So it's like anytime this happens, I'm just so confused. As she's trying to kick me, I say, listen, if you try this one more time, I'm taking your necklace away. And I use that as a consequence in the moment because I thought, well, this is something she just got recently. She cares about it. I'm going to make it a bad situation for her. So here I was becoming big, scary daddy, starting to threaten her. And she tried again with her foot. And I was like, okay. And so I said, turn around, because the necklace had like a loop thing in the back. And I could, as I moved my hands towards her, they were shaking. And I noticed that there was this part of me that was like, I don't want to look foolish in this moment by trying to use shaking hands to unclasp this little loop. And I also don't want her to feel like she's getting the better of me. Like I had this real sense of being disrespected and this feeling humiliated by the situation. Like how could this child who is supposed to be my loving daughter, you know, act this way kind of thing. All these like, you know, framework of dark, aggressive perspective on her and myself in that moment. So as my hands got towards her neck and the necklace, instead of trying to fumble with shaky hands, I just grabbed both parts of the necklace on either side and ripped them apart. And as soon as I had done that, she turned around to me and had this look on her face, like terror. And she started screaming. And it was very quickly for me in that moment, I was like, oh shit, I just crossed a huge boundary. I just made a really bad choice. And I knew I had to do something about it. But rather than get into all of the what I did about it, I want to pause there because that's really where it was, like that moment stopped for me in time for quite a bit. And it brings up a lot of shame for me in the moment. And then even recounting it, I can feel some of that shame too.
Thank you. Thank you, Matthew, for sharing that story. That, yeah, I feel it in my body. And yeah, I guess I'll step in next. I have two kids, as I've talked about on the podcast, and I'm an adoptive dad. My kids are now 19 and 17. And one of my kids, my younger kid, we went through a period of time where they were really struggling in school. They were in a school that was not serving them very well. There was a lot of conflict. There was a lot of interpersonal stuff going on. There was a lot of teacher stuff going on that they weren't doing super well with. And we reached a point where they were just done, where my kiddo was just done. And there were a couple of nights where we knew that they had work to do. My kid uses they, them pronouns. So here we are, right? We knew that they had work to do, and they just absolute, like, no, I'm not doing it. There's nothing you can do or say to make me do it. And there was an expression on their face that was just absolute flat, expressionless disconnection from me or from my wife. And my wife kind of tried, my wife kind of got as far as she could and couldn't, had to step away, you know, tag, you're it, your turn. So for me to go in and like just stand in the doorway, stand in front of them. And it's the thing in your body, right? And that's that same thing, like this puffing up that happened in my body. And like, I don't swear, I'm not a big yeller, but like the deepening voice and the bigger words and the, you're gonna, and you know, and again, it's the, like, give me your phone. like the one thing, right? And instead of no, I don't want to give you my phone, they just said, fine, here's the phone, here's the iPad, I'm done, leave my room. Get out. And the sense of rage in my body, that is absolutely it. The tension in my shoulders, the tension is like, you know, how dare you? How could you possibly, like, you're gonna do this kind of thing? And that was, yeah. I see. Then that was a recurring, that type of interchange happened a few times during that period of time. So yeah. And you left it in the tension. So I'm going to leave it in the tension.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Alrighty. Well, this has been a joy-filled conversation thus far. Alrighty. I've got one for you. You know, my daughter's 16 months old, just for context. So she's just little, and I've already touched that piece of me with her. And so she must have only just been about 1 year old, and she was sitting on my lap and we were kind of playing around. And at the time, coming into winter, I get these kind of cracks and splits in my nose that they'll just bleed all the time. Very sore. And she was sitting on my lap and she reached her hand up and her finger hooked the inside of my nose and her nail went right into the split of the cut, and she pulled my nose down and she pulled my head down. And I immediately just got blinded with one pain, and right behind it was rage. And I let out this growl, this like, and what shocked me about the growl was that, and it was a scream, it was a growl and a scream, it was my dad's growl, which I had never done before. So that was a bit of an eye-opener. But what I did was I pushed her away and sat her down about 3 feet away from me, and held my nose and looked at her and just yelled, "Bindi, no." And she had big wide eyes. She's only 1 year old. Big wide eyes. And she dropped her head and she started kind of like scratching and playing with her diaper. And then she started to softly whimper. Just this tiny little, it wasn't her cry, like if she was hungry or in pain, she just started to whimper. Yeah. So leaving it in the tension, that's where I'll leave mine.
Thank you,
man. I could cry right here. Just thank you for sharing the stories.
Trust me, I went to my men's group and did a lot of that.
Yes. So there we are. We've shared some stories. So Matthew, now what? Now what?
Yeah. I can imagine, like, there's two things that come to mind. One is like, well, how do you fix a situation like that? But first, I think what's even more interesting is what causes that situation, you know, especially what causes my reaction. Yeah. What are the things that lead to that buildup for me and cause me to erupt? We could go there for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have control. I mean, and that that for me is what has popped up in these situations over and over, is there's this sense of like, I am completely not in control of what is happening in the situation. And there's some part of that that is like unacceptable on some level.
Yeah. Like, we could use the word triggered, right? Like, there's something, some switch happens and for myself, like emotionally, physically, as I was describing, my body was changing. And then suddenly, like in that moment, I'm no longer loving dad. Mm-hmm. I'm something else. I mean, in a part of myself that in my case, I'm less familiar with because of my distance from anger most of my life. So even as I've started to cultivate assertiveness and experimented with things like rage in a workshop setting, like rage and anger don't enter my life. They certainly never, I never wanted them to enter my home. So that in the moment, I have both the anger and then shame about the anger as it's occurring.
Yeah. Yeah. Shame, I think, is the big emotion that comes up for me when I look back at it now. Like I, in the moment, that's not my experience. In the moment, mm-hmm. what I am feeling is, yeah, I hate the word triggered, but that's absolutely what it is. Like, oh, my nervous system overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Heat comes for me a lot. Like I feel mm-hmm. hot, red faced, sweaty palms, like all of that kind yeah. of thing. But underneath it is there's shame. So talk more about that. Talk about, I guess it's kind of a mindset question, right?
Yeah, there could be a mindset. I mean, I've heard like when shit hits the fan, most human beings move away from pain. But if there's something around a higher purpose, I think I heard this from Brené Brown maybe, when there's some like higher purpose that could guide my actions, if I have the ability to reconnect to that, such as, you know, for me, I've already decided and it's never happened, I will never hit my kids. But even the positive version of that is like, if I'm holding the purpose of respect for my kids, no matter mm-hmm. what, so I can still be assertive with them. And I still may have to give them direction, but to be connected to the higher purpose so that in moments of suffering, I can, as a mindset, move towards that. All of that, unfortunately, goes out the window with the issue of nervous system dysregulation. And that's something I'd love to talk more about. That's
yeah.
The fight, you know, we all know like fight flight is a yeah. reaction. And we know, we've heard things like freeze. And then there's kind of like a shutdown. And then generally when we're regulated, we're not triggered, we feel safe and connected. That's the other state. That's like a regulated state. Fight flight. It's the sympathetic nervous system that has looked out at all the data available and said, okay, from what we're seeing and hearing and picking up on, like millions of data in a couple seconds, this is a threatening situation. The nervous system decides that for us. And then it comes as a signal to let the brain know, okay, brain, now here are the thoughts you should be having based on that. Here, body, you, this is how you should be acting. So when I get tight fists in a mm-hmm. fight flight situation, it's because my nervous system decided this is a dangerous situation. It perceived it as such. And now my body's reacting to my thoughts, like, how could my daughter do this? Are you going to let her get away with this? That kind of thing. So it's important to me to remember that the nervous system is one of the starting points that then directs the thoughts, the emotions, the body. And there's, I mean, I'm engaged in a practice now around this that I can speak a bit about, which is really fresh for me. Like I just took a course with a great coach named Sarah Baldwin, and it was all about nervous system regulation. And mainly what I got from it was like, oh, wow, like this can change over time, but it has to be a practice. And a lot of us, I think, naturally will do these kinds of things, like just self-care, like, oh, I need to take a bath or I need to do yoga. But to be able to relate that to the people in our lives, like if I'm about to go into a conversation with my daughter, I might need to do something first in my body to show my nervous system this is a safe moment, because my body might already be preparing for war.
Yeah, it's the ski slope analogy, right? It's the we are at the top of the slope all the time, and when we approach the slope and keep going down, we start getting paths worn in, and we get the mogul fields worn in, mm-hmm. and we get that kind of stuff habitually, and training ourselves out of it, taking a different path down the mountain, takes a mm-hmm. significant amount of time and effort to get out of the rut.
Yeah. And maybe not, I used to think, I mean, for sure, time over time, but this amount of practice I'm talking about for me personally these days, it's probably a few minutes. Mm-hmm. Whereas we think about a bath and yoga, like those are, you know, it could be half an hour each. That's the good news, I think, in all this, that as a practice, I think what matters is the day-to-day consistency more than the amount of time spent. It's really about, like, how do I show my nervous system that there's this higher self in me that can cultivate a relationship with that nervous system, and not shame the nervous system for putting me into fight flight, but show it through care for my body. We could try one if you guys want. There's a tool I use every day, and it's hilarious in public, but we could do it here.
With no video and just listening to the sounds of our voices, yes. Go for it.
Yeah, and it's an audio exercise. So the point of this, I'll do it first, and then I'd love for you guys to do it with me, because we're going to sound like chanting monks in a moment, which is awesome. So what I'm going to end up doing is I'm going to make the sound vu, and I'm going to extend it with as much of my breath as I can. And I'm going to get, as I start, I'm going to lower the tone as much as I can. And what I notice is what's happening is it sends a vibration. And that's the intent. If I'm up here, voo, no good. But if I go, voo, and I'll show you in a moment again of an extended one. If I do that and I focus the energy of vibration down into my core, it's like my organs, everything in the middle of my body is getting a little like massage. And it's so cool. It's like that doesn't happen if I'm in a fight flight state. So I'm showing my body through physical experience, you're safe. It's very different from like an affirmation where the nervous system is like, huh? Like it doesn't get the words. But if you show it through a feeling in the body, which could also be like an old memory of a loving connection. But let's try this VU one. I'll do it once and then you guys can join me for another. So I'm going to put one hand on my heart, another hand on my belly, also from our friend Daniel Ellenberg, showing me how to be connecting my heart to my courage. And I'm going to do the sound. And as I go, you'll hear me lower. I'm just going to keep lowering it and then focusing the vibration into the core of my body. So it goes like this. Mm-hmm. So there's a good pause before and after that. Are you guys ready to do it once with me? Okay, so we'll take a deep breath in and boo it out. So let me ask you guys just to notice, what do you notice? And then report when you are able.
Well, firstly, did I have the longest voo?
Oh, yeah. You got points.
Yes, it's like when you're at the urinal and you're like, I'm going to pee longer. On a more serious note, so that kind of resonance in the chest, it reminds mm-hmm. me of an om,
yep.
you know, kind of like from meditation mm-hmm. or mindfulness or yoga. And having been practicing kind of vocal training recently, that does a lot of kind of chest
speaking and kind of vocal training, it's very meditative. And it almost reminds me of kind of like, you know, the sound rods, like sound healing, how like they'll put the rod. It's like a tuning fork.
Tuning fork. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. A good forking. So the tuning fork, they'll put it like on your chest or your belly or your head or your third eye and then ding, and you can kind of feel the vibration through the body. Yeah. It's quite powerful.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't do VU, but I, in pranayama breathing, yoga breathing, there's a bumblebee breath. That's the Western translation, but it's like when you, hold your nose and you're popping your ears after being swimming and humming at the same time. So you open up the tubes from your ears into your sinuses, into your inner ears. And it buzzes through my whole head. And that's a meditative practice. Yes. And same thing. It just short circuits the thinking. So it's just the vibration instead of the thinking.
Well, and I think great chance to shout out Julie and John Gottman and their work, because they talk a lot about that when there is a regrettable incident or you and your partner are in the heat of it, and there's, you know, clearly there's a, they'll say flooding as opposed to trigger.
Right.
You know, when you're emotionally flooded, it's a great opportunity to pause and take 10, take 20. For me and my wife, it's like we can, it's clear when both of us are kind of out for blood at that point, and it's, we need 20 minutes. And I can tell you that first 5 minutes of that 20 minutes, my head is running through every reason why I'm right and why she's wrong. The next 5 minutes is starting to see holes in my argument. And then the final 10 minutes is, I can't wait for this 10 minutes to end so I can, you know, apologize or at least take ownership and still communicate.
Yeah.
Why I was feeling X, Y, Z because of my perception of ABC.
Yeah. I like, my teacher, Sarah, would say that the nervous system, especially in fight and flight, but any system that's, or any nervous system moment when it's in dysregulation, the job of that, it's like there's a lawyer in our heads and it's convincing us of that state to continue and deepen that state. So the lawyer in my head is saying, yeah, fight, flight, for sure. Fuck her. Like, what the hell is, you know, it's, and then like, here's all the information and the data, why I'm right. Like you said, Brandon, like, yeah, it's, it's convincing.
Yeah. In that moment, because the emotions are so compelling because they're so real. They're so real. In that moment. So all signs point to the blame being passed to this individual, because the reality is the messages that I'm receiving from my emotions that I haven't yet distilled and investigated. It's the headline. Daughter kicking me in shins with dirty rain boots. Oh, the injustice. Anger justified. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That mindset, and the bigger, it's the zooming out function, right? Like the arguments with my kids and my kid about homework and what you're doing. And I then build a whole entire case about their future in that moment.
Yeah. Like this is the kind of person I'm creating in this moment, or this is the kind of person they're being.
Right.
And if I don't fix this, they're going to get, there'll be some form of pushback from the community. Cause clearly I know what the community is going to appreciate and not, they're not going to appreciate this kind of behavior. I better get this in check now before she goes out, or he or they go out and get pummeled by the society out there that I should be afraid of.
Yes.
Let's pull that thread a little, because, you know, there's a, say what you will about Mr. Dr. Jordan Peterson. But that's just something that he drives a lot with parenting, and his parenting advice is, you know, your kids need to understand the behaviors that are going to have them accepted in greater society. Like if they are, if in the environment they're raised in, they can get their way just by chucking a tantrum, they're going to have a rude awakening when they get into the real world, and that their boss won't suffer a tantrum, right? Or when they're dating.
Yeah.
So I'm curious of, you know, great ways in which, and maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here, may not be there yet, but, you know, ways in which we can meet our children where they are. Because clearly if they're acting up, there's a need not being met.
Yeah.
So meeting them where they are, but also, you know, you taking a necklace off or ripping it off, obviously an overreaction as you claimed it to be, but you know, someone else might be like, you're going to get a pop on the butt if you keep this up, right? So actually the making sure the learning moment or the teaching moment is not lost.
Yeah, that's tricky. I'll give you my take on that. And I like the nuance. I love stuff like that. So let's see. I don't mind Jordan Peterson, by the way. I think he has a lot of really good stuff to share. What I think is an important distinction is the mindset that says, you know, in the moment, if I'm in that fight or flight and I'm trying to correct, I question the choices I'm going to make that are fear-based about what is and isn't going to happen in my child's life in 5 or 10 years. I think I probably don't really know the truth, and that can live alongside the importance of some kind of teaching moment, which probably has to happen, and this is my opinion, not in the reactive state.
Yes.
Right.
And so that teaching moment can be, we could talk about that stuff, repair, and I can finish my story and we can all finish our stories. That's the distinction to me. It's like I'm going to come at it from fear about what I'm projecting about the future, which is probably not very realistic. Or am I going to come at it from, I'm here to help build a resilient child. How can I do that and be in a regulated state when I'm in that conversation or dynamic?
Yeah. Yeah. So that having that self-awareness and being able to self-regulate then, to identify like, man, my emotions are hot right now. I'm being flooded or triggered. And, you know, the formula that's present, if I continue, it's likely not going to be, it's going to become a regrettable incident. So if I can take that time and take that moment, but make sure to connect back, not push it under the rug, but, you know, circle back when every party's emotions have been able to perhaps regulate and cool down.
Yeah. I feel I have more access to my daughter and my son, who's younger even, when I'm trying to get something across or trying to get to their wisdom. It's like it's impossible when they're near or in a tantrum or dysregulated state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, as each of you were sharing your stories, I could feel like my chest start to puff up. And I'd be like, ooh, she's going to get it. Like, ooh, they're going to get it. And I'm sitting there with my popcorn being like, oh, I can't wait to hear how, you know, Boyson's kid, you know, gets their comeuppance for that attitude, right? It's so easy. I was having this conversation the other day on a podcast that I was a guest on. And we're talking about how much we love to see the bully get their due with that right, that clear villain that's been portrayed in the movie or the story or the book. And we want to see them. We want to see judgment for there to be a clear distinction of you are wrong. Do you get that? It's like a submission almost.
Yeah.
And the perceived satisfaction that comes from watching them get that comeuppance. But really what's the, if we're at it to win, you know, then it's blood's drawn at that point. And, you know, I think of it like, you know, back in my fighting days of sparring, it's like, man, someone hit me with a stiff jab, even if they didn't mean to, I'm biting on the mouth guard and I might hit them a little harder myself. You know, these little jabs that,
right.
I want to go there because that I think that that's really important, right? Like somebody hits you with a stiff jab that's probably even harder than he intended to hit you.
More often
but
than
it
not.
Doesn't matter. What comes up in me is, you know, hit harder. There's a reciprocity kind of thing that I think it's driven by fight or flight on some level, but there's a you're not going to dominate me.
Yeah.
Kind of thing that has definitely shown up in my relationship with my kids when I'm in that, when I am not regulated, when I am not in a good space, where I'm not focused on big picture, is like, oh yeah, you think you're going to control this situation? Well, I'm going to show you, kiddo.
Yeah. Yep. My wife and I recognize that as tit for tat, where, you know, I might bring up something that's frustrating or she might, and before I can even listen and receive what she's telling me, I've got three examples where she did the same thing. Like, and it's, and I in that moment want to share those examples. Like, who are you to tell me this or that, instead of receiving the, and really looking for the intention of what's being shared. And what's been pinging in my mind through this whole conversation has been intention and impact.
Right. Yeah. I want to bring in another nuance here. You guys have heard of mirror neurons. Yeah. So the idea being, it's very easy to see if two people are in a conversation, sometimes they start to mimic each other physically and you can see their attunement through the way that their bodies are looking similar. I think that's also what's happening when our kids are dysregulated. Yeah. Because we love them, because we're in their presence, our mirror neurons are starting to pick up on their dysregulation and see threat and danger and start to feel the dysregulation in our own bodies. And I'm sure that happens, you know, with our partners, any human being. It's unfortunate when, you know, if we come across social media that's all negative or news that's all negative, then we're getting that experience and starting to feel dysregulated. So I say that to say it's not that it's the other person's fault, but it's a part of what's going on. You know, I can question why, what is it in my history, or what is it about being a man, or what it, all that is that I'm bringing to the situation. But also I recognize now that, like, it's also because I'm in connection. I'm attuning to this person. I'm just not as aware. I'm picking up on their stuff and it's translating. So this is sort of like an eye for an eye experience. They get mad, I get mad. We're just attuning on some level.
A deep breath. I had a deep breath there. So I'm going to come back to my story. So what's also true, and this goes right along with that attunement place, is that my wife and I have created, I'm just going to say this. I have created such a deep and connected, like a vulnerable space with both of my kids at different times. Right. And my kids have significant trauma in their early childhood. I'm an adoptive dad. They have significant trauma, and trauma shows up in disconnection, right? When trauma is activated, they disconnect. Both of my kids disconnect. And the frustration that arose for me in those moments of anger, what it covered up was an incredible amount of grief, because my body understood what was happening when I saw that dead-eyed look. That dead-eyed look was trauma.
Yeah. Defense mechanism.
Defense. That was gone. I'm gone. And the, and it was like the desperation in me just popped up, is like, no, yo, you can't go away. No, it's like, you have to stay, here. Like, even if we're going to fight through this, right? Whatever it is. But I had to learn, we had to learn that it was like absolutely 100% necessary that we stop everything that was happening in that moment. Like, I can't do this, leave my room, means I can't do this. Leave my room. And then I have to go back and look at all of the stories about, you know, all the future stories, all the future think, all of that stuff, and then get back to the big picture of what do I want? I want a kid who learns how to regulate themselves, who knows how to create boundaries when they're being triggered into their own trauma responses, who knows how to work through things in their time and space so that they can become, you know, a resilient, healthy kid. And it's like, am I helping that process? Yeah.
What happened in your situation, Boyson? Did you leave the room? Like, how did that story play out?
I left the room and went back and took that time. And what we've learned over time, so this was 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. What we've learned over time is like, give it the time. Mm-hmm. And our kiddo comes back. Right? They come back. And what we have continued to learn about them is that they know their internal boundaries pretty damn well. And so if we actually trust that, when we establish like, okay, we know what we have to do, right? You've got this to do and this to do and this to do. Do we understand? Yeah, we understand. Okay, we're going to trust you. And when we make the space for trust, they keep stepping up to it. Mm-hmm. But they couldn't do that when it was over-pressured, pressurized domination coming from, you know, my alpha personality and my hyper-achievement. Like, they couldn't get around that, but they can get around it in their time. And the vulnerability reconnection for us is like, my kids understand that I have vulnerability. My kids understand that I have emotions. I share my emotions with my kids. I share my fears with my kids when I have those fears. And that's the reconnection place is like, I care about you so much and I want you to be strong, successful in whatever way you want to be. Do you know how much I care about that and want that for you? Yes, Papa, I got it.
Sweet.
Yeah, beautiful, man. Time. Trusting the space, which also means letting go of control.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a pretty quick remedy in my situation. Fortunately, my child's prefrontal cortex is still infantile in the moment, so I was in charge of the rationale behind it all. So my daughter, she's yanked in my nose and ripped the split open. I've pushed her away. It's bleeding. She's sitting there just soft weeping. And and the immediate thing that came over me was this grief. Because, you know, I've been with my daughter for her first year. I was primarily stay at home while working kind of part-time, flexible. And so she and I were just like every day, day in, day out together. And the story that came to me in that moment was, this is the first time that she's ever felt alone. And like that she didn't have loving connection. And it broke my heart and I grabbed her immediately and just held her and just, I started bawling and I was like, I'm so sorry. Daddy's so sorry. I'm so sorry. And what do you know? A minute later, she's happy. And I brought that to my men's group because I couldn't sleep for about 2-3 days. Like, it jarred me. And anytime I thought about it and I told Christine about it, I started to cry again. And so I took it to my men's group. And I didn't feel like I was prepared to share, but a man in my circle shared his story unprompted from my situation, but shared his story of how his father, you know, dominated him in one of those moments where he was, you know, he was acting out and never apologized for it. And this man's in his 60s and his father's been dead a long time. And he was sharing, I still hate my father for that. He never apologized. And so I got to share, that prompted me to share my situation. And I just bawled, just bawled my eyes out. I was able to kind of move the sadness and the grief and the shame from that experience. And also comforted by the men that were like, trust me, you'll get used to, you'll get used to your kid, you know, taking you to that point and them having a cry and then being happy a minute later. That was not abdicating the responsibility I have in my reactions. And that wasn't vindicating my response or validating my response. It was just validating the human experience of that, hey, I got flooded. My central nervous system detected pain, and my response in that moment was to fight. But then the man who shared before me about his father came to me and helped tie a bow on this experience. He goes, you know why you're going to be a great dad? He goes, you apologized. You repaired. Mm-hmm. He goes, my father didn't do that.
Yeah.
And that helped take a lot of weight off my shoulders. And I think about that experience now, and I don't get the ick so much anymore in my guts thinking about it. And it comes to me when she's getting me to that level now, because she's starting to resist. She's starting to show her own little personality starting to come out, and she's starting to resist. And that experience comes to mind quite quickly. And I then have a choice with that awareness.
Nice. Oh, man. This is workshop-y. It is.
So, Matthew, what did you do to repair? And then maybe talk more generally about the idea of, so what do we do with dad rage? What do we do about this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in my situation, it was a repair moment. That's how I felt. I framed it. And I stayed nearby her body. So I just ripped off the necklace, saw her face. She was screaming. I stayed near her body as she was screaming. I allowed the energy that was there from fight flight to be the loud voice, but it was the apology. So I said, I'm sorry. What I did was not okay. It's not okay for me to break your necklace. I lost control and I made a bad choice. I'm sorry. I don't know if she actually heard me, but I wanted that to be a transfer of some kind. And I just was attentive. I think about 10 minutes later, we were able to be on the couch and I was just holding her. And we spent a good chunk of time snuggling. I'm sure I apologized a number of more times. And then what wrapped it up for me was, I told her, I will fix your necklace. I didn't know what I was going to do, but my neighbor has some jewelry tools. So I made an appointment for us to come over, and I brought my daughter with me, and the neighbor showed me how to fix it. And my daughter watched me fix it. And it was a really cool, like, physical manifestation metaphor stuff of like, okay, she sees, this is what you do when you fuck up. You apologize. You make things right. I didn't say any of that to her. I didn't teach her that. I showed her. And that to me is one of the biggest lessons that I'm still learning is like, if I want to teach my kids, how do I show them what a human being does when they get rocked off their balance point? Because it's going to happen over and over. That I suppose that answers a bit of that last question. What do we do about this rage? I think a daily practice of some kind that speaks to the nervous system is one very valid practice. It's so easy to let self-care go as a dad. And I would say bringing a little bit of that back in is going to help, you know, sleep helps. but then repairing, knowing that the problem isn't that I lost it. The opportunity is that I can repair this. And that's going to be an ongoing cycle.
Well, that's how muscles grow, right? Those little micro tears. Yeah. And that's what I found in my relationship with my wife is that this is the first relationship that I've ever been in that we've fought. You know, not ugly, but we fight. But we have tools, we have process, and we know that we're moving the energy, and we, without fail, gain more awareness. And it's been powerful and nothing gets shoved under the rug. And I appreciate that. And now we're looking, now we're looking at this, you know, this beautiful little being coming into herself and her own uniqueness. And I've got my projections. Christine's got her projections and she's like 50-50 biologically, Christine and I, but she's 100% herself. And I think she's going to challenge both our ideas of what is right or wrong, or, and also she's just a mirror and a reflection back to us at how we are. So it's like this opportunity, a personal development gauntlet. Because we choose to be conscious parents, which in itself is head fuckery. But just for example, like my share about when Bindi yanked on my schnoz, I mean, I couldn't sleep for days after that. And every time I looked at her, I just wanted to like hold her and cuddle her and hug her. And, you know, like there's impact here. So much impact. And I'm going to mess up in the future. Promise you. But
yeah. And we might rise above it a little bit sometimes too. I didn't want to lose that, but it, I've had moments where I normally would be triggered and I'm not. And it's part of the practice, I think, of things like self-care, nervous system regulation, whatever it is. I can tap into that a little bit more now. And I believe that it's kind of a hope and a long-term intention that I can keep growing that muscle, as you put it, Brandon. I don't have to freak out. Just that's what my body's going to do if I have no other practice.
So what I'm getting from that is grace for myself and grace for my partner, grace for my daughter to go, hey, yeah, we may be aware of these processes. We may be aware of these tools, but it takes time. It takes reps. You know, we've got to touch the stove a couple more times.
Yeah, and I have to be careful never to put the perfection lens on it. Like it's never going to be perfect. It can only get a little better, little by little.
I love everything that you've just said, and something that I haven't heard yet that has served, that keeps serving me, and I'm guessing is working for you, is that maybe it's as the kids get older, right, and they start developing a little bit of their own executive function and decision making. Reminding myself over and over and over that this is not personal. Like it's not personal. Like their defiance is not personal. Their desire to not do things right now is not personal. Their failures are not personal. Their successes are not personal.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
and I can actually, I can kind of separate myself, take a step back from that, because my ego gets all tangled up into this stuff. But then I just have to watch. It's like, oh wow, there's this being with their own brain, and this is not about me, this is about them. And let them kind of figure it out. And then I also have to remind myself, and I think this is another way out, I have to remind myself of what an asshole I was when I was a teenager. And, you know, some of my will to dominate my children is so that they're not like I was. When I was that age.
My dad tells me, he goes, Brandon, I can't tell you how good it feels and how healing it is to have you call me and thank me and apologize. Because he said, my dad told me that day would come, and it hasn't come soon enough.
Yeah.
So harkens back to, you know, a conversation I had with Dene Sebastiana, in that he says it's not so much the amazing things we do for our kids, even the amazing models that we give them in our behavior and how we turn up and show up. Often it's the wounds. It's how we wound them that gives them everything they need to inform the lens that they develop in their reality of the world. because if we're just perfect or trying to attain that perfection, we're going to fall certainly short of that. And we're also going to convince our kids that, you know, perhaps convince our kids that they have to be like us, or the people they date have to be like their parents. It's dysfunctional. Whereas what I hear you share, Matthew, is that you get on your kids' level, meet them where they are, and take ownership for your mistakes. Mm-hmm. And you show them that that's okay too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the practice. And even that can't be done perfectly, but it's worth striving for sure. I wanted to tie back to something you said, Brandon, about why does it feel so good to see the bully get defeated? It was something about that. This to me is an important piece to be aware of in our culture, that generally the stories we're taking in have that quality to them of a kind of a beast or a dragon rising up and then a hero coming and vanquishing it and kicking it out of the kingdom. That storyline is the one that I know my nervous system relates to, especially in that fight flight place. And there are other stories that are more interesting and more possible. So we could say it feels good because there's a tension of the bully, and the lack of retribution is part of that tension. And when they get defeated, there's a release of that tension. That's maybe it. That might be all that's valuable in it. But with regard to another way, I love stories where they flip that. And instead of it being about a hero kicking a monster out, it's about a leader of some kind welcoming the monster, in this case, into the community in such a way that the one who lost the trust of others, also known as a monster, is being loved up, and their gifts can be returned to the community. And that's a very nonviolent approach to life and stories.
Yeah, we're not slaying the dragon, we're learning to ride it. That's where you start looking at, you know, I talked to Daniel Ellenberg about curiosity and compassion. You know, really seeking to understand where the bully's coming from. That in itself is a practice, because I instantly want to see them get their ass kicked. Whereas if I can work the muscle to have inquiry and go, you know, what's driving that behavior? What lens do they look through the world with?
And transmuting fight energy into something else that's fun. Like fight energy is not bad if it's alongside, I think, Boyce, and you put this beautifully in a previous conversation. It was like having that kind of competitive fight energy alongside compassion, for example, that's a beautiful integration and union. That happens in sports. That we don't have to demonize fight energy. Mm-hmm. It's valuable energy.
Yeah, especially if you're protecting your family and your children, right? We can't let it go. Yeah,
if there's a real threat, you may have to run across the street really fast. That's good use of fight energy.
Thank you, Matthew. So we're reaching the end of an hour, and where can folks, so you've got some stuff going on, tell our audience where they can get in touch with you and learn more.
Sure. You can go to my website, matthewsloan.com, and that'll have mostly links to all the other stuff. You can find a kind of mini e-course about nervous system regulation called Stable Dad 101. That'll go a little bit deeper into this and invite folks who engage with it into a bit of a practice. You can also find my blog. You can go to fatherhooddojo.com and find, it's a lot of writing and podcasts about my current experience. And it's sort of like me in the trenches. What am I learning? What am I trying? And it tends to have a combination of humility and a positive approach to moving forward. Podcasts, similar bent, sometimes just conversations with others who have learned similar things in the fatherhood trenches. Otherwise, I'm on LinkedIn, and I'm not really on any other social media right now.
Congratulations. Look for links down below in the show notes. And Brandon, you want to set up the last word?
Yeah. Don't know what that word is. But I will say, I want to thank the listeners for joining us today, because you are the reason this is all possible. You are the reason why we do what we do. All 3,000 of you. And yeah, it's just an honor to share this space with you, Matthew. Thank you for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your gold. I'll say till next time, because it's you know, such a generative, powerful conversation. I really love the alchemy that the three of us created in this space. And so, yeah, you know, this is the Mankind Podcast, the show where we break the molds of modern manhood to prove there's more than one way to be a man. And what do you say, lads? Did we do that today?
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
Three thumbs up.
Thanks, man.
Thank you, guys.
Lots of love. We'll see you all next week.
This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. I have been your host, Brandon Clift, and I personally want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. And of course, I want to thank you, the listener, because through your attention and your support, you make it a heck of a lot easier for us to let men out there in the world know that they are not alone and that there is more than one way to be a man. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us, it happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week. Lots of love.